Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening what feels like the definitive playbook for the American side hustle revolution. I mean, this isn't just a trend anymore, is it? It's a massive societal shift.
Oh, absolutely not. The stats are they're pretty staggering. You see that nearly half of all working Americans are now operating some form of secondary income stream.
And what's really driving it? Because the sources seem to suggest it's not just about extra cash.
No, it's a convergence of realities, really. Mm-hmm. You have stagnant wage growth hitting up against, you know, the rising cost of living, student loan debt. But there's also this deeper desire for financial independence and some kind of creative fulfillment that maybe the day job isn't providing.
Right. It moves from being a kind of quiet necessity to a full-blown career strategy. So that's where we want to focus our mission for you today. The challenge isn't really whether to start one. The real question is how you build one that, you know, generates meaningful income, operates efficiently, and this is the big one, doesn't just consume every spare moment of your life.
Exactly. We're talking about moving from a side job to a strategic asset. And the sources, they're very clear on the hurdles. Time scarcity is the absolute killer. Then you have limited startup capital, super competitive markets, and the big one lurking in the background for everyone.
Burnout.
Burnout. It's the chief enemy. So this requires a strategic approach, not just, you know, more hustle.
Okay, so let's unpack this landscape a bit. The whole idea of a side hustle, its public identity, has completely flipped. I mean, the sources say it's gone from a stigma of financial desperation to a badge of entrepreneurial ambition. It's actually cool now.
It is. And the demographic totally backed that up. You see millennials and Gen Z leading the charge for sure. Over 60% of younger workers are in on it. Mm-hmm. But we're also seeing a huge uptake from Gen X and even baby boomers. They're looking at their retirement plans and realizing the old rules just don't apply anymore.
And technology just threw gasoline on the fire. Platforms like Etsy, Shopify, Upwork, they've basically made it possible to launch a global business from your kitchen table.
That's the beautiful part. It's this democratization of entrepreneurship. But, and this is the huge caution for you, lower barriers to entry mean one thing.
More competition.
Dramatically more competition. If anyone can do it, you have to find a way to be better, or at least different. And that lack of strategy leads right into these five common failure patterns we have to talk about.
Okay, let's hear them. Because avoiding these seems like step one.
The first, and honestly the most common, is a failure to validate actual market demand. People build something they're passionate about, a skill they like to use, without ever checking if someone will pay a meaningful price for it.
So you're busy, but you're not actually building a business. You're solving a problem nobody's willing to pay to fix.
Precisely. The second is just inadequate time management. Wildly underestimating the commitment, not building sustainable rhythms. It's a fast track to exhaustion. Third is poor financial planning. This shows up as underpricing, not tracking expenses, or buying a bunch of fancy software you don't need yet.
I always worry about the quality piece, though. You know, you finish a 10-hour day at your main job. How do you deliver top-tier work consistently?
That is such a valid point. And it's the fourth failure pattern.
Yeah.
Quality inconsistency. A few bad reviews online can just sink you before you even get started.
Hmm.
You have to protect quality, even if it means growing slower. And finally, the fifth one, which is maybe the most insidious, it's failing to transition from being a worker to being a business builder.
Yeah.
If the whole thing depends on your time, every single hour, you haven't built a business.
You've just bought yourself a second, more demanding job.
Exactly. You've just created a trap.
Yeah.
And before we get into the how-to, we have to touch on the psychological side. This is really where people hit the wall.
The source is called burnout, the primary psychological danger. That initial excitement, it wears off, right? And if you haven't built in recovery, it's just not sustainable.
You cannot run on adrenaline forever.
Yeah.
And then you have these identity conflicts, divided loyalties, and you need to be really, really clear on things like non-compete clauses and intellectual property.
That's a huge one.
Huge. If you use your work computer or even your work email for your side hustle, your employer could potentially have a legal claim to what you've built. The boundaries have to be crystal clear.
And what about imposter syndrome? That feeling like you're not qualified to charge what you're actually worth.
It's so common. And the way you overcome it isn't positive thinking. It's action. It's getting small wins, getting that first payment, getting feedback. That proof is what erodes the doubt over time.
Okay, so let's pivot to finding the right opportunity. Not just any idea, but one that's actually viable.
The sweet spot is the intersection of three circles. It's your existing skills, what the market actually wants, and what you're personally motivated to do long term.
Which means you have to start with a really honest self-assessment. Inventory, your professional skills, sure, but also your hobbies, your practical skills. And think about your strengths. Are you a people person, consultative, or are you more systematic and detail-oriented? Because a great coach and a great bookkeeper have very different skill sets.
And you have to be brutally realistic about your constraints. How much time can you actually commit, week after week? What equipment do you already have? Your hustle has to fit your real life, not your fantasy life.
Okay, so once you know what you can do, how do you find out what people will pay for?
You become a detective? Browse marketplaces like Upwork or Thumbtack. Don't just look at listings, look at what projects are getting funded. Look in your local community, like on Nextdoor or Facebook groups. What are people constantly complaining about? What problem is just not getting solved?
And then just talk to people.
Just talk to potential customers. Ask about their problems, what they've tried, what they'd be willing to pay to make it go away.
This is where that concept of problem solution fit comes in, and it feels like a total game changer.
It's the core differentiator. The best hustles solve a problem that is specific, painful, and frequent enough that people will gladly pay for relief. You're not selling a service, you're selling a solution.
Give us that example from the source material, the bookkeeping one. It was so clear.
Right, so you could offer general bookkeeping services. You're a commodity, you're competing on price. Or you could specialize in helping independent contractors manage their quarterly estimated tax payments.
A very specific, very painful problem.
Exactly. You're saving them from that huge, painful surprise from the IRS 4 times a year. That's specificity means you can charge a premium and your marketing becomes laser focused.
That focus is the perfect transition into defining your niche. The sources are so adamant about this. Narrower is stronger.
Absolutely. When you only have a few hours a week, you can't afford to waste time on marketing to everyone. Specialization makes you more efficient. You know who you're talking to and where to find them.
But don't people worry about, niching down too much, that they'll miss out on customers?
You eliminate the wrong customers. The financial incentive is just too big to ignore. Generalists always compete on price. Specialists compete on expertise, and they command premium pricing.
Like the graphic designer example.
Perfect example. A general graphic designer versus someone who only does menu design for independent farm-to-table restaurants. The second one can charge way more because they understand that specific world, that specific problem.
So niche is set. How do you structure the actual offerings?
Define 3 to 5 clear service packages. And this is vital. Define exactly what's included, the deliverables, the timeline, the number of revisions. This is your shield against what we call scope creep.
Explain scope creep for anyone who's lived that nightmare, and what's like a magic phrase to put in a contract to stop it?
Scope creep is that classic, oh, while you're at it, can you just. It's all the extra work that clients ask for that wasn't in the original agreement. It destroys your profit. The phrase to use is something like, any requests outside the defined package will require a separate change order and may incur additional fees. You have to define and defend your boundaries.
And pricing. We know underpricing is a danger.
You have to resist pricing based on fear. Price based on the value of the problem you solve. Underpricing just signals low quality and it attracts the worst, most demanding clients. It's a paradox.
You start at market rate and then raise prices as you get better.
Exactly. As your reputation grows, your prices should too.
Okay, this all leads to that big mindset shift from worker to owner. The sources hammer home the idea of operational
It's
systems.
the only way to do this part-time. You have to create systems. A documented process for onboarding new clients, a workflow for how you deliver your service, and templates. Templates for everything. Proposals, emails, contracts. You have to stop reinventing the wheel every single time.
What about the financial foundations?
Non-negotiable. Separate business and personal bank accounts from day one. It will save you a world of pain at tax time. And you have to track the most important metric, your effective hourly rate. That's your net profit divided by the total hours you actually worked.
Why is that number so critical?
Because it tells you the truth. You might be charging $50 an hour, but after you account for software costs and all the unpaid admin time, you might find your effective rate is $5 an hour.
Wow.
If it's not economically rational, you either have to raise your prices or you have to build a better system. And that brings us to the biggest constraint of all time. You have to be brutally honest with yourself here. Most people think they have way more free time than they actually do.
Right. The sources say 10 to 15 focused hours a week is a realistic goal for most people, and the key is to protect that time like it's a meeting with your most important client.
And because that time is so scarce, you have to prioritize ruthlessly. Only work on high-impact stuff. We can rank them.
Okay.
Number one, revenue-generating activities. Delivering the work, sending proposals, that's it. Number two is building your systems, documenting processes, creating templates.
Making yourself more efficient for the future.
Exactly. Number three is marketing. And then way down at the bottom, number four is minimizing admin. Batch your emails. Do your invoicing once a month. Ration your time.
And here's one that's tough for high achievers. Perfectionism is the enemy.
It absolutely is. Done is better than perfect. Has to be your mantra. Good work delivered on time builds a reputation. Perfect work that's late just leads to burnout and unhappy clients.
And what about the boundaries with the day job?
They have to be sacred. Never, ever use employer equipment or time for your side business. It's not just an ethical issue. It's a legal one. You're protecting yourself from IP claims. And you also need little rituals to transition your brain. A walk around the block, changing your clothes. Something to say, okay, I'm the employee and now I'm the entrepreneur.
And all of this is really in service of preventing burnout, right? It's about sustainable pacing.
It's a marathon. Yeah. You have to schedule recovery time, sleep, exercise, seeing friends. You have to build a business that can survive a tough week at your day job without the whole thing collapsing.
So we have our niche, our systems, our time locked out. How do we market this thing efficiently with only, you know, maybe 10 hours a week?
You need high return, relationship-based marketing. Remember, you probably only need 5 to 10 great clients to make this work.
Okay, so what are the most effective channels?
The sources point to three. First is direct outreach. Start warm with your existing network. And when you reach out, lead with their problem, not your service.
So don't just say, I edit podcasts.
Right. Say, I know a lot of podcasters struggle with audio quality and lose listeners the first minute. I fix that. And then have a really easy next step. Open to a quick 15-minute call.
Nice. What's channel two?
The referral engine. Just do amazing work and then make it really easy for people to refer you. And this is key. Build relationships with people who offer complimentary services.
So if you're a photographer, you partner with a makeup artist.
Exactly. You send them clients, they send you clients. It's a win-win.
And number three.
Content marketing. This is the long game. Consistently create valuable information that answers your ideal customer's questions. One good LinkedIn post a week is better than 5 mediocre ones.
We have to pause here for the big financial reminder. Taxes. This trips up so many people.
It does. That side hustle income, it arrives untaxed. You must immediately set aside 30 to 40% of every payment for taxes. That money is not yours.
It's just visiting your bank account.
It is just visiting. Now, when you inevitably hit your capacity limits, you have 3 strategic options for scaling. Option one, raise your prices.
Simple, effective. It weeds out the bad clients and you make more money for the same amount of work.
Option two, improve your efficiency. Go back to your systems. Automate more, batch more. Work on the business, not just in it.
And option three,
delegate. Start small. Hire a virtual assistant for a few hours a week to handle admin tasks. But you can only do this after you've documented your processes. You can't outsource chaos.
And for those who are dreaming of making that leap to full time, what's the safety net look like?
The guidance is pretty conservative, and for good reason. First, your side hustle needs to generate at least 75% of your current salary consistently for a full year. And second, your revenue has to be diversified. No single client should be more than 20% of your income. That protects you from a catastrophe if you lose one big client.
Okay, let's bring it all home. For you, the learner, here are the core takeaways. Choose a viable, narrow niche. Build clear, documented systems. Price based on value, not fear, and protect your time and your energy with ruthless consistency.
And I think the final thought here is that the goal isn't just extra income. The sources frame this as building an asset. It's professional insurance against an uncertain job market. It's also a laboratory where you can build new skills. The real achievement is building a sustainable business that gives you returns over time while preserving your own well-being.
That balance, that's the whole game. So start with that honest self-assessment today. Find your niche and start building. We'll see you on the next deep dive.